Cain and his father were lost. Cain had to admit it to himself the second day when they awoke in their tree-perch beds and saw nothing but swamp below them all around.
Father, I do believe it's time.
I hate to have you do that, son. It never seems to me to be safe.
I've done it before, Father. Besides, if we want to save Kelvin...
Yes, all right. You better position yourself there in the bow, because it's too wet here.
Right, Father.
Cain took the dragonberry from its associates in the arm pouch and gulped it down. The berries had performed as usual, separating his awareness from his body so gently that it seemed it wasn't happening until it was done. He formed a mental picture of his brother's face. Instantly, he was going over the swamp. The greenery below blurred. Then, abruptly, the blurring stopped. He was over the island. He saw the ancient castle where they had been confined, and the Chimera itself was there, doing something in what seemed to be a garden. Willing himself to join Kelvin, he drifted cautiously down the path that was bordered by the pointed posts. Those posts had green patinas, intriguingly. He floated straight through the barred wooden door. Kelvin and Stapula were there, both alive and, miracle of miracles, talking to each other.
There's this mental block. I can do it, but you can't. With my help, you can.
It's what my father would call hypnotism.
Right. Post-hypnotic. You forget until it's time. I don't even show a thought.
I don't know, Stapula. If I trust you...
You have to. If you want to make your play.
All right, all right. You hypnotize, you make the block.
I'll hold up a finger, and you focus both eyes on its tip. I'll move the finger back and forth in front of your eyes. All you do is keep your eyes on the fingertip.
You certain it will work?
It will, unless you're an idiot. Now, stupid!
So they were planning something. Hard on the heels of that surprise came another.
Another? Another? There shouldn't be! Merton! Grumpus, help!
Instantly, Cain visualized himself going to his father. He envisioned his father's face as he had Kelvin's. He didn't try to slow it. He had to get back to his physical body before he was trapped. Once he was in his body, he didn't think he'd ever leave it again. He was so panicky that he noticed no details until he saw the Frugir staring into his face. Marvania was shaken. Physically, she was standing there in her garden, sting upraised in fright. Never, ever had she thought to. Ever.
What is it, Marvania? You catch a thought you didn't like?
Another? Another?
You said that. Also, help. Help with what? Are you losing your wits? No, don't do that. I don't want to have to talk with just Grumpus.
Shut up! I thought it legendary, mythical, but it isn't. It's real. What a discovery!
What are you blathering about?
Shut up, both of you. Can't you see how distracted I am? There was a disembodied human in there.
Disembodied food? Ugh. Doesn't sound appetizing.
Soul stuff, imbecile. Astral.
Ghostly, eh? I thought only humans believed in that.
It's true. Dragonberries.
Dragonberries?
I should have known. But I thought it was just a myth. Anything that fantastic isn't logical.
What's logical?
Shut up. They take the berries, and then they separate astral from corporeal. They just move around, and they hear and see everything. I should have known when I learned that the young hero was from a world with dragons. That's where dragonberries are supposed to be.
How come I don't remember that story?
Because you're obtuse. Well, that goes double for you, big teeth. Both of you put together haven't the brains of a pickled human.
Now see here, Mervania, I resent...
Oh, shut up. I'm too thrilled to argue with you. Listen, with those berries, we wouldn't be confined. We could swallow them and go anywhere we wanted. To... Oh, very well.
Food?
No, not food. We wouldn't eat in that form. But we could see and hear everything.
Now, why would we want to do that?
Entertainment, moron! Discovery! Adventure! Oh, we could visit distant lands, other worlds, other frames. Astrally, we could go and see and hear anything there is.
Oh, who cares?
I do. And you would too if you had half the brain of a Frugir. I want dragonberries. Listen, Merton, we might find more of our kind the square ears don't know about. We could visit them astrally, and maybe even...
Go to them and mate?
Maybe, if the square ears cooperate.
Would they?
I don't know, but think of it. We could be a whole colony, a whole world, perhaps.
Sounds stupid to me. Why should there be more than two? Two's enough to mate. I could take care of that while you sleep.
Several would be better, because that's the way it is. The companionship, the communication.
One more like you would talk me to death.
But Mirvania refused to be dampened. She wanted those dragon berries no matter what the cost. Squirtmuck stared into the round ear's face with puzzlement. He had thought this one dead, but now it was awake and looking back at him. The round ear was reaching for something under its armpit. A weapon? Quickly, he grabbed the ugly creature's pale, knobby wrist. The round ear resisted him and struck at him with its other hand. The gauntlet that had been on that hand had slipped off and dropped into the slime while the creature was unconscious. Firmly, Squirtmuck placed a webbed hand against the creature's loathsome face and held it while he explored under the disgusting, smelly arm. What he found was a bag with a drawstring. He pulled it loose, stood back, opened the sack, and peered inside.
No! No, Father! It's got the...
Shut up! You're not helping things!
Squirtmuck prodded with a fingertip and finally tasted one of the dried berries.
That will kill you! It's poison to anyone but round ears. It's magic. Big magic.
Squirtmuck furrowed his head hard, trying to decide what to do with the dried berries. He wouldn't eat them or give them to another Frugir, even if it was someone he disliked. Possibly they were magic. In that case, the square ears would be interested. He decided to put the berries with the rest of the loot and not hide any of it except in the great tree hollow where such forbidden objects were placed. Yes, he'd do that, and the god or the square ears might reward him in this or some other life. Clearing his throat, he looked around at the members of his band busily examining the objects they had taken. One, a brother to one of his wives, had the belt and sword that had been on the big round ear. Another Frugir had gathered up the two gauntlets. Others had the younger round ear's sword and several knives.
Come!
Under his watchful eyes, certain objects were placed in the bowl of the collecting tree, and others held out as tribute to the god. That night, Squirtmuck tried to feed and talk with the captives. He was unsuccessful in both attempts. For some reason, the round ears tightened their mouths at the sight of fresh, squirming provender. When all reasonable questions were asked, they answered with foolishness about having great magic and powerful friends. Long before daylight, Squirtmuck considered burying them deep in the mud and forgetting that they had ever been. Alas, the god had to be served, and the square ears placated. In the morning, they commenced the trek. The Chimera was really in a troubled state. Mirvania kept remembering what she had glimpsed with her mind in the larder room. Merton, maybe just to be mean, kept poo-pooing the experience.
We have to make them show us, even if we don't eat them. Oh, shut up! You'll get raw meat enough. But this is something we can't ignore. All our life I thought it couldn't be. And now I know it is. We just have to get those berries. Why, with those, Grumpus, we could go see dragons. Yes, that's what I've been telling you. And Merton, try to think at least as well as Grumpus. All the sights we can see, the chance of finding us a mate.
If we can get the berries.
Yes, that's why we have to get these creatures to bring them. We can't get out, but they can, if we let them.
But they won't come back, with or without berries.
True, but if we can offer them something in exchange, they might.
What?
Our old cup of stings. You know how they value those.
But they're dangerous, even to us.
But if we make a deal.
We'd be risking all our heads. No thanks, Mavania. To toy with food is one thing, to deal with it another.
Mavania felt despair. She knew the lesser heads were right, yet she hated to give up.
Mavania, what are you doing? Daydreaming again?
I thought you said I talked too much.
You do. You also daydream too much. But they're coming now. They're outside.
What are you talking about?
Use your mind, Mavania. Your supposedly smart mind.
What was she doing letting Merton tell her things? She searched past the wall of their island. There, she encountered thoughts.
If I hadn't taken that berry, we wouldn't have gotten caught. That was stupid of me. Stupid as Kelvin.
Kyan Knight, one of the escapees, and...
I got the boy into this. I should have watched better. Now he'll never see his bride.
Kyan's father, John Knight. Ravania started their body walking daintily for the big gate. The tribute had been fetched across the swamp, and the escapees were back in their power. All was as it should be. Except, she still wanted those berries. Oh, yes, indeed, she wanted them. Pushing open the gate, she looked after the disappearing row of bubbles, and then at the thoroughly bound and helpless knights.
Welcome home! This time it's really no surprise.
What do you mean?
Why, that you were here before, visiting. Did you think I would not know?
I deny that. Whoever was here, it wasn't me.
Poor human foodstuff. So very slow to grasp.
Here they come!
Philip was pointing at the Kant's cavalry charging down on them. They kept coming faster and faster in overwhelming numbers, and still General Riley, alias St. Helens, did not give the order.
Those horse and riders could be phantoms, illusions.
Back into the forest! Take refuge behind trees! Don't fire a shot until you see that these are real!
The men obeyed as good soldiers should. St. Helens wasn't certain that these Hermans were good, but he knew they were disciplined. They waited behind the trees, arrows knocked, crossbows cocked, swords, shields, and spears ready should these soldiers turn out to be genuine. The Kant's cavalry halted just out of bowshot. A tall Kant's general stood high in his stirrups and waved the Kant's flag of blue and white.
Truce! Talk between commanders.
Agreed. We meet midway.
St. Helens walked out to meet the Kant's officer.
General de Gaulik, Army of Kants.
General Riley, Army of Hermandy.
The man was big and ugly and had a large nose. The nose was his most impressive feature.
General Riley, also known as St. Helens, you serve a madman. Your people have no quarrel with mine and never have. You should go back.
I serve the interests of he known as the Round Ear of Prophecy, Kelvin Knight Hackleberry. It is for the newly formed Republic of Kelvinia that I lead this invasion force.
You lie, General Riley. You serve she who the Round Ear fought.
Zoanna?
None other.
I might have known. That temptress wouldn't have just drowned. But why didn't Kyan and Kelvin find her? Has she been in a different frame?
You are surprised, and yet not surprised, General Riley.
Yes.
Do you want to serve her, her interests?
No. No, of course not, but...
You do not wish to serve her? You do not want to attack in her name?
Not in her name. I'm a soldier, and I serve a king.
A false king?
It is not the place of the servant to question the master.
Yet you hesitate, General Riley. Do you ask yourself why?
I serve an ideal, a purpose, a good purpose. I have to invade.
There will be dying, much slaughter.
I know. I'm sorry about that. Surrender to me now. Then when the Round Ear comes, he'll make everything right.
Will he?
He made things right for the people of Aretex.
Will he with Kants? With Klingland?
Both. There shouldn't be fighting.
And where is the Round Ear of Prophecy now?
Otherwise occupied at the moment.
And yet, there will be an evil man in control.
The Round Ear isn't evil.
Kelvin Knight isn't in control of Kelvinia. Another person is. He whom the Round Ear once defeated in another place. That king in Zoanna. The queen you thought gone forever. Zoanna with more magic at her command than that possessed by her father.
Damn!
I see you will not turn back, General Riley. You have made up your mind.
I wish there was some other way.
Suddenly, a feathered projectile struck the Kantian general. The crossbow bolt had struck high in his chest. His chest? No. For on the instant, the general was an aged woman.
Melba!
But Melba was dead. So the general was the witch. Someone on St. Helen's side had disobeyed his order, and the disobedience might mean a victory. Might. Horses and soldiery raced across the plain. Bowstrings snapped. Shields caught projectiles and bounced them away. The Kant's cavalry was charging his force of Hermans. The woman wavered, then resumed the appearance of General de Garlic in blood-spattered uniform.
Is this how you keep your word, Riley? Is this the truce of an honorable man?
I had nothing to do with it, I swear!
Rough Hands grabbed St. Helens on either side. He did not try to resist, though for him that was difficult. He expected to be slain immediately, but instead his hands were bound and he was put on a horse. Two Kantian soldiers rode on either side of him. Two others rode with the general, the Witch General. Looking back, he saw dying men and boys, dying because he had led them here. How quickly it had dissolved into carnage. He hoped Philip and young Lomax would survive. The Hermans hardly had his sympathy, but those two boys were enough like him to be his sons. They arrived at the castle and the joint palace in what seemed like a remarkably short time. Two very young boys ran from the palace. One was dressed in blue, the other in white. Both had large lace collars.
Kill him! Slay us, that man!
The childish finger pointed at St. Helens. Lomax drew back a bloody sword from the chest of a Kantian soldier. He hadn't time to question it now or to feel shock at what was happening. With blood on him and fighting going on every side, all he could do was act continually to save his own life.
Lomax!
Philip!
Lomax, we've got to retreat! We're outnumbered!
Yes, they were, obviously. What had happened anyway? He hadn't seen who fired the crossbow. St. Helens had warned them, had trusted them. He was in charge, like it or not.
We've got to get! Give the order, Lomax, now!
Retreat!
Lomax charged through the brush, hoping others would take the hint. Around him he saw Hermans backing, retreating little by little into their home territory. After a long, long time, probably several whole minutes, subjectively distorted by the pressure of the situation, he determined that the Kantians were not following. Around them was the supposed safety of Hermandy trees and bushes. Through the bushes, he could see the road down which they had marched, defeated and driven back, but not all killed. St. Helens had trusted him and left him in charge. He would have to find out who had fired the crossbow bolt at the Kantian general. If a man was still alive, he'd have him executed. After that, taste for it or not, he'd order the Hermans back into Kant by a roundabout way.
St. Helens! You will be avenged!
General Moore Crum was eating a handful of bright yellow, exceedingly tart apple berries when Klinglanders descended on their camp.
Phantoms! Isn't the witch going to learn?
A Thrud mercenary fell back, a short-shafted arrow protruding from his throat. Blood stained the ground and the arrow shaft.
Damn! Real this time!
In a moment, they were battling for their lives. A Klinglander raced for him on a big bay mare, spear leveled at his chest. Moore positioned his shield to take the point. He braced himself for impact, knowing it would be the last thing he ever felt. The point was at the shield, ready to shatter it and take his life. Then spear, spearsman, and charger vanished, leaving him alive and shaken.
Damn! Another phantom! Mixed right in with the real combatants.
Watch out, General!
He moved his head aside and put a sword low on his mailed sleeve that almost dislocated his arm.
Fight for victory, men! Fight!
Blood bubbled in crimson puddles from torn throats and pierced chests. On and on into an increasingly weary day. Whoever had thought that war was glorious should be here now. General Lester Crum positioned his army for the big charge at the oncoming cavalry. He did not know why he felt so certain about it, but he knew the Kantians were real this time. Real with death and the means to deliver it. An arrow narrowly missed him.
Well, that one was real.
Then Les had his sword out and was clanging it with a Kantian. The enemy soldier was very good, and he did his best not to lose to him. A second Kantian came in fast and cut him on the arm above the elbow. Les opened his mouth to shout, and then the first Kantian lunged hard. The blade skidded off good mail and then penetrated, going deep into his chest. But by then, he was hearing everything as though it were far, far away. Then, all changed for him, as if to a babbling of a crowd or a murmuring of a brook. Faint, fainter, faintest. John could hardly give the war a thought. She was too concerned with Helen and what was happening to her. What was happening to her? John wished she knew. Every single morning, Kelvin's wife was sick and vomiting, and it was no innocent morning sickness. It was so violent that sometimes there was blood speckling it, and that didn't seem to her to be right. Was there a difference between round ears and point ears when it came to birthing? John had no way of knowing. Helen rose from her chair and ran for the bathroom. John picked up the orangemon fruit from Helen's plate. The fruit smelled fine. Helen returned, looking pale and worn.
Helen, I'm worried about you. You've been sick every morning lately. I don't think it's the food. I just tried some.
It will pass.
Yes, but when? You have to think of the baby, Helen. This may not be good for it.
Father! Kyan!
They all embraced there in the Chimera's larder while the alien hunter looked on. As Kelvin had gradually come to accept, looking on was what Stapula did best.
You've got your belt, son, and the Muvar weapon, and your gauntlets, even your sword.
I have, Father. I've tried the Muvar weapon, but it had no effect. The Chimera could have taken everything from me, but it seems contemptuous and didn't bother.
That's something. Being prisoners of a creature that doesn't fear our weapons, apparently with reason.
The Chimera must fear his kind. They came here to kill it.
Did, perhaps? How'd you get caught?
Coming back for you. We guessed you'd run into difficulties.
You were right. The Chimera's too much for me.
Too much for anyone.
Too much for anyone from an inferior frame.
Well, son, we're in trouble.
Father, when were we not?
Say, Stapular, you old phony. You ready to break out of here?
Stupid inferior being.
Well, we have to do something, don't we, Father?
I could wish for a laser. Unfortunately, your father-in-law lost the last one before we fought the final battle for Aratex.
A pair of magic gauntlets once propelled me to the top of a huge silver serpent. Once I was up there, they knew how to keep me there and how to fight. Kelvin, do you suppose that if you got to the top of the Chimera behind the sting...
Dumb inferior life form.
The sting can send out blue lightning bolts. It shot them at me and...
Electricity? It has to be. Like the electric eels we had back on Earth. That's why an anti-magic weapon had no effect. Electricity is science.
Brilliant! For a dumb, inferior life form.
Listen, Stapula, I'm getting tired of that. If you're so brilliant and superior, why don't you tell us how to save ourselves?
Because there isn't any way. You either kill the Chimera with laser bursts, or you get caught by Square Ears and eaten by it. After you're caught, you're finished. All you can do is enjoy the food until you become food.
You were planning something. You and Kelvin.
When was that?
When I was here before. Not physically. I mean when I returned in my astral form.
You were here? Astrally?
I was. I had those dragon berries we brought and—
Shut up! All of you!
Why?
Because the Chimera reads minds that don't know how to block and compensate.
Ravania tugged at her copper earrings and considered the matter carefully. They had been planning something, Stapular and Kelvin. Probably they intended some ruse, some trick. What she wanted was those dragon berries. What a release that would be. Their body might remain prisoner here on the isle, but their minds would range everywhere.
Are you thinking of that trade plan again?
Yes, Merton, I am.
Offer them freedom. Let the older round here go with the one who had the berries. Tell them to find the berries for us, get them back, and bring them here. Then when they don't come back, we eat those who are left.
Merton, that's perfect.
That's logical, Mavania, as you should be.
Neither of them had much use for feeling. That was her department. Nothing to do now but go to the larder. She could take along some of the fruit they liked so much, and then she could ask. She did hope they would be open to reason. Squirtmuck could not get the collecting tree out of his mind. The objects taken from strangers had never interested him greatly, but those berries were tempting. The one he had sampled had made him embarrassingly sick, but if a round ear's stomach could handle them, then so should his. It was so intriguing, the thought of dying as the young round ear had done, then coming back to life. Squirtmuck had never thought much about it before, but now that he did, the thought of what existed after dying was intriguing. Irresistibly, bit by bit, he toyed with the notion. Late during the day, while searching for squiggle worms, he managed to get back to the area of the tree. If he took just one of the berries, would anyone know? Suppose it killed him, and he did not return to life. He wasn't quite old enough to want to die. True, he was tired of a lot of what made life, but not tired enough to give it up yet. He thought about it for a moment more, while the sun started setting and dappling the trees and the greenish water with orange.
Why not? Why not indeed?
He might not have another chance. Reaching into the tree's cavity, he drew forth the bag. Blurg scratched a square ear and remembered that he had not used his viewing crystal yesterday. As leader of his people and official greeter of visitors, he should check the transporter. As usual, there would be nothing. But then again, there might. There was always that hope. He picked up the squarish crystal from its stand, held it before his eyes, and concentrated. He drifted his sight across the swamp, finding the Frugirs at a camp on a platform of floater weeds. They were doing Frugir things. He had almost brought his sight back to the crystal when he remembered the Frugir leader.
Where is Squirtmuck, anyway?
Efficiently, he moved his sight in circles, checking Frugirs. Squirtmuck was not there. What an irritation. He had to search until he located the missing creature, or was assured that it was dead. Wider and wider he viewed, until finally he thought to check the collecting tree. Squirtmuck was there. He held a bag in his webbed fingers, and from it he took a berry. He held it poised in front of his mouth.
Berry? What berry?
As from a great distance, which of course it was, it leaped at him.
Dragonberry? No, Squirtmuck, no!
But it was already too late. Squirtmuck, propelled by some incomprehensible flight of Frugir fancy, had suddenly and forcefully thrown away the entire bag. All stood back as the Chimera entered carrying fruit. The monster dumped its load of nectar fruit into the trough. It smelled lusciously good. Even though he knew it was fattening, Kelvin could hardly wait to start eating. He edged away from the wall, his feet seeming to have a mind of their own. Suddenly, he was running, right past the Chimera to the open doorway.
Going somewhere, little toothsome?
He put on the skids without knowing why. Now, he was standing right beside the monster, with a female human face almost near enough to kiss.
Well, if you feel that way, Kelvin...
Go!
Scapula grabbed the tip of the sting, which was now pointed at the ceiling. Kelvin found himself weak and tingling all over just outside the door. Inside the cellar, his brother and father lay sprawled, unconscious or dead. Amazingly, the Chimera, too, was down. Only Stapula was alive and moving.
Quickly! Before it comes to!
What?
Kelvin's feet wanted to carry him, but he could hardly stand.
The electricity in this confined space took them all out, but I'm not certain for how long before they wake! Hurry!
Abruptly, he was remembering. Stapula waving his fingers at him, implanting a course of action deep within his head. Kelvin ran to the fence and grabbed a post. The post, slippery and solid, resisted his strength, but he was determined. Then the gauntlets took over and wrenched it from the ground.
Come on! Get your posterior in motion!
He was to run with it back to the Chimera. He was to raise it like a great dragon spear and drive it deep into every living eye socket the monster possessed. Kelvin stood there, his weapon poised before Mirvania's fallen face. She looked almost angelic, her eyes closed, her features relaxed. She had been about to kiss him. Drive the point into one of those lovely eyes? How could he? The Chimera was helpless.
Now, stupid! Now!
Something snapped. Kelvin trembled and pointed the sting away from the lovely face.
Ineffective minor world fools!
Stapula charged across and took hold of the shaft.
I'll do it myself! I should have known better than to trust a lesser creature to do something important!
Stapula pulled. Kelvin resisted, pulling back with the strength of the gauntlets.
You fool! You idiot! You brainless nothing! Can't you see that it's about to wake?
No, Stapula! I can't do it this way! We only want to escape!
That's all you want, maybe, you imbecile! I want more!
Stapula exerted considerable strength, and it was as if he wore magic gauntlets of his own. Kelvin pulled off balance, but his gauntlets maintained their grip.
Let go! Let go! Let go!
They fell together. Then they were up against the trough, and Stapula was bending him back. The edge of the trough struck his head, and he saw stars. Then, Stapula had the sting. He held it poised above the Grumpus' head, searching out the dragon's eyeball.
Die, beast!
Without realizing how he did it, Kelvin was upon him.
You fool!
fool! You moron! You minor world trash!
An arm with a man's hand on it reached out and grabbed the shaft of the sting where Kelvin and Stapula held it.
Here, let go of that!
Stapula did not let go. Thus, he remained in place as the huge claws reached out, took him around the middle, and lifted him into the air.
Now see what you've done? Minor world, idiot!
Kelvin released the sting. With a quick motion, he brought out his sword. He swished it at the pincer and then struck. The pincer would have a scar, but that was as deeply as his blade penetrated.
You really must not fight. You really must not.
Suddenly, the hunter had hold of his own left wrist. He pulled at the transparent gauntlet. It came off, along with the entire hand.
What?
Where the man's wrist should have been was a metallic something that could hardly be bone. From the foreshortened arm, a ruby laser flashed out. It cut through one of the pincers.
Now you'll see! I came prepared. It was planned that I be the last and hide this until the last moment. I didn't want to have to reveal my nature, but this minor world scum forced my hand. Now, Chimera!
Casually, Stapula lanced off the second pincer.
Listen, minor world being! You wouldn't have it the conventional way. You had to make me ruin my cover! Now listen to the death cries of the last known surviving Chimera in all the frames!
No! No!
Kelvin could not have said how it happened. Suddenly he raised, reversed, and flung his sword forward. The blade penetrated Stapula's throat precisely in the middle. Then he raised his intact hand and yanked the sword partway out. Something black gushed forth. Alien blood? No, not blood at all. Oil. Stapula was what his father called a robot. Whatever it was, the fluid was necessary for the thing's functioning. As it poured out, Stapula collapsed. He could not function without oil pressure any better than a living creature could function without blood pressure.
Oh, you have saved us! You have saved us!
Now, John Knight and Kyan were opening their eyes, returning to bewildered consciousness.
Oh, it was all a trick. A trick of the hunters.
That thing never would have tasted right. It would have given Grumpus indigestion.
Kelvin looked quickly to his father and brother, and back to the faces of their captor. Now they were in for it. Now they were all going to be rewarded in the worst possible way for his colossal stupidity and for the gauntlet's interference. Now they had no way to escape being eaten by the Chimera. Grumpus snapped his big jaws and darted forth his forked tongue as if hungry already. St. Helens prepared himself for death as well as he was able. He expected a spear to be rammed through him or a knife slitting his throat.
Kill him!
No, Precious. You must be a prisoner.
He killed you!
Not yet, Precious. Not yet. Please, darlings, humor me. My kind are hard to kill.
With those words, the old woman ceased speaking and closed her eyes as though for death.
No! Don't kill him! Put him in the dungeon! As for Helba, take her in.
At that moment, a large howcat, very black, ferocious of eye, leaped from behind the second young king and ran to Helba's apparent corpse. Suddenly, the howcat stiffened all over. Then, it collapsed like a black, empty bag. The blackness stayed there and seemed even to be melting as a soldier jerked St. Helens' arm. Now there were two corpses, witches and witches familiar. But whatever else he might think of her, he knew that the witch had saved his life. The soldiers rushed him anyway. Lomax steadied his young resolve as he looked up and down the line of survivors of the recent fight. They had lost only about a dozen men in addition to St. Helens, but 20 more were wounded seriously enough to be sent home. The remainder, Lomax determined, were going to cross that border again. But first, there was this other matter.
All right! Who did it? Who fired that crossbow bolt? Who violated the truce?
No one spoke. All the Hermans remained impassive, while the mercenaries were interested rather than apprehensive. Judging from appearances, none here were guilty.
You, Philip, did you?
Yes, I did it. I did it. I'm the one.
You? But why?
St. Helens plays chess. He knows you have to take out the Dark Queen.
You've killed him! You're responsible for his death!
But he's my greatest friend. Oh, Lomax, please. Please hang me as he asked.
You really...
Please. I did it for him. I did it for all of us. So that we could win. The same as when Kelvin destroyed Melba and Aratax.
Damn!
Please. It was my dearest friend's last request. He was not only my dearest friend. He was my only friend.
You really want me to give that order? You really want to hang by your neck and choke, your eyeballs bugging out? You want to die?
Yes.
No! That'd be too easy for you. You have to go back with us into Kantz. You have to fight the enemy and make up for what you've done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, kind, gentle friend.
Zoanna stared into her crystal.
Oh! Look!
Roforth was looking. He saw the witch who controlled the kingdoms of Klingland and Kantz lying motionless without a visible sign of life. There was that black huckat lying on her face, melting into it. There were the Kantzian soldiers dragging a bewildered St. Helens away.
Does this mean we've won?
We will have won if she never recovers. We must see that she doesn't.
You will use more magic.
Magic won't be needed in the war. Of course, my not helping our side will mean many more casualties. But some of those will be our former enemies.
A shame. They'll fight their hearts out and never know why.
Yes, they'll die for us one way or another. Those who survive the battles may have to die later.
Slowly, with our help, and with much pain.
Of course. That is what we both want.
Lester Crumb imagined that he was back fighting the Queen's guardsmen with Kelvin's Knights of the Round Ear. Then he opened his eyes and found that the man bending over him wore a different uniform. Overhead was the roof of a tent.
We were fighting Kant soldiers. I fell. Someone saved me. It was almost like another battle when I was unhorsed.
Save your strength, Commander.
Commander? Him? He could hardly remember. His head hurt and pounded like a drum beaten to announce someone's death. He tried remembering the officer's name. Klumpecker, that was it. Lieutenant Carl Klumpecker from Thrud.
Did we win the battle?
No, Commander, we lost.
Many casualties.
I'm afraid so, Commander, on both sides.
Can we win the war?
Eventually, Commander. When Commander Riley and the Hermans and your father and his troops and ours all reach the Caps.
Yes, the Caps.
Insane business. Two capitals in one. Governed theoretically by two very slowly maturing boys.
Commander, your wound is so serious that...
If I cannot command, you must, Lieutenant. We must not surrender. We must fight on. My father and St. Helens are depending on us.
Yes, Commander Crumb. We will fight our way into the Caps and into glory.
John did not like the way Helm looked. It seemed less like a healthy pregnancy every day. Not only was Helm disgustingly sick at frequent intervals, she was now having bad dreams.
John! Oh, John! I saw it again. The thing with three heads. Two of them baby heads and the other are dragons. The baby heads were crying and...
That settles it. I'm going to get something from the doctor. Dr. Sturck has to know something. He was a royal physician before I was born.
She met Dr. Sturck in the hallway. He looked straight ahead with his bird-like eyes and pressed a small decanter into her hands.
Three drops twice a day in her teepee.
She re-entered their room. Helm gazed at her with eyes seemingly reflecting horror. That was not the way a young mother-to-be should look.
Helm, it's time for your teepee.
John pulled on the cord to signal the servant. In a moment, the servant was there with a big steaming pot of the beverage and a plate with a selection of bite-sized cookies. John poured the cups and carefully added three greenish, thick drops to Helm's. She stirred it with a spoon, and the syrupy medicine blended into the dark greenish hue of the beverage.
Here you are, Helm.
She watched as Kelvin's pretty dark-haired wife took the cup listlessly and slowly sipped. Helm's eyes widened. She raised the cup again, in both hands. Eagerly, she sucked down every drop.
That was good.
Mervania's head moved close to Kelvin's.
Kelvin, since you saved us by destroying the cruel hunter, we will not eat you or your companions.
You're letting us go?
Yes, but there is a price.
What price?
Those dragon berries Kayan used. I want some.
Kelvin looked unhappily to Kayan. He hated speaking for him, and he hated not to.
Lost. Brugir's.
Unfortunate.
Now we eat.
Wait! Suppose we get you some. Maybe we can bring you some seeds so you can grow them here on your island. Then you'll always have a supply.
That would be nice, Kelvin.
Yes. If we can get the seeds back home, and if the Square Ears will let us.
I read your thoughts, Kelvin. The Square Ears will let you, but you must tell them first.
We will.
You may take back your weapons, but you must not touch the hunters.
Fair enough.
Kelvin crossed the cell to Stapula's pinned body, and without his willing it, his right gauntlet reached for the sword haft. Fascinated, he watched his arm lift the sword from the oil. The blade was covered with a thick, dark grease that probably would help preserve its metal. The gauntlet wiped off most of the stuff on a clean section of the body, then sheathed the sword in its scabbard.
You must tell the Square Ears about this. They must know what was planned. They will come to get this robot and its weapon and guard against this ever happening again.
I'm glad to have been of service.
Kelvin looked into the open blue eyes of the robot he had believed to be a person and was forced to think.
Junk. Nothing but junk. Not flesh and blood at all.
Yes, an excellent imitation. It is what your father calls science. You are now free to go. Do not forget, though, what you have agreed to do.
We'll talk to the Square Ears. If they will permit us, we'll get your dragonberry seeds.
Unconsciously, Kelvin hefted the sting in his left hand.
You may take that with you. To me, it is of no more importance than your hair or nail clippings are to you.
Thank you. Thank you for...
Come before it changes its mind.
Minds.
We don't have a boat.
You will be met. Frugiers will come.
They know?
Some are quite near. Their minds, like yours, are always open.
Oh.
Kelvin looked once more at the dead robot. Why did he persist in thinking of it as a once living man, though now he knew better?
You have a quaint human way of anthropomorphizing. You want to believe that thing was human because it seemed so, even though all it did was insult you in order to keep you from getting too well acquainted and perhaps fathoming its secret prematurely. Just as you persist in thinking of me as a pretty woman, though you know better that I am nothing of the kind. Your human capacity for willful self-delusion is amazing. I like you too, Kelvin, perhaps as foolishly. I would have missed you after we ate you.
The trip away from the island and back through the swamp was one Kelvin had not expected to make. He looked over at his father and Kayan as the Frugiers carried them, wondering whether they were as amazed as he at the turn of events.
I can't believe it! I'm actually going to see Lonnie again!
John Knight said nothing. And the Frugiers splashed away, transferring them from the lake to the swamp, and then, by infinitely slow progress, to the edge of the swamp, and finally, the transporter cave. Square Ears were waiting there. The big Square Ear with the Chimera's sting greeted them.
I am Blorg, the official greeter and sender, keeper of the transporter to other worlds, keeper of the last known existing Chimera, chief.
That had been his ritual greeting before. Kelvin wondered if Blurg wondered why they had not left.
I know where you have been. I know you were to have been eaten, but I would not have interfered after freeing you the first time. You are forbidden to go to the Chimera's island again.
Mervania wants dragonberries. They are the price of our release.
I know. The chief of the Square Ears tries to know all. Watch.
With a wave of his boneless fingers, Blurg changed the flat, smoky surface into a living picture. In the picture was a Chimera, a now animate Stapular, and Kayan, John, and Kelvin.
That's in the larder, where we were kept. And is this television?
Watch.
In the crystal, a tiny Chimera was attacked by an even tinier Stapular. As Stapular hung on the sting, there was a flash of blue light. The Chimera, John, and Kyan fell unconscious. The tiny Kelvin staggered outside, struggling to tear up the sting from the ground. He pulled the sting out of its row and ran back with it. Stapular mouthed at him, and he was over the Mavania head with the sting positioned above a very feminine eye.
No! No!
Kelvin reached for the crystal. He could not do it. He would not. Though it happened over and over in a countless number of crystals a countless number of times, no crystal was going to make him do what he refused to do.
Watch!
Kelvin controlled himself as well as he could. The miniature Kelvin did not destroy the Chimera with the sting. Instead, it happened the way it had in life. Now he and Stapular were fighting, rolling over and over. Now Stapular was pulling off his own left hand, and the ruby light declawed the Chimera. Now the creature was at the mercy of Stapular.
No! No!
But the crystal merely showed what had happened. Gradually, he realized that the image was not a separate thing, but an actual rendering of what had occurred, and could not change the outcome. The miniature Kelvin had out his sword, threw it, and Stapular appeared to die. Now the Mavania head and Kelvin were talking. At the wave of a strange hand, the picture vanished, and there was only a smoky crystal in which the tendrils of smoke gradually stopped swirling. There was nothing there anymore, except stone.
What will happen to the oil-blooded man?
The robot will be returned to its makers. They may or may not repair it.
So Stapular may live again?
It may again be activated. But such a construct will never again deceive us. And none will get closer to the Chimera. We owe you our thanks for discovering and nullifying that threat, which would surely otherwise have destroyed the last member of a unique species. We had been aware that Stapular was artificial, but not that he had a built-in laser. As for those doubts of yours about the nature of living, who is to say? There are scientists and sorcerers who hold that there is only thought, and that all else is thought's product.
I don't think I can absorb...
Never mind. It is only philosophical and abstract. What is important to us is what we perceive. What we accept as real is real. And what we know to be illusion is generally illusion.
I see.
That is correct. He survives best who does not question too vigorously.
Stapular won't be back to bother the Chimera again?
Never. But you will return with the seeds.
But you said...
Correct. You will not go to the island. You will bring the seeds here. They will be carried there by a Frugir I designate.
You will be waiting? I won't have to...
I will keep watch.
We will find the same setting? On the transporter?
You will if you look. Come.
They followed Blurg to the transporter cave and inside. Blurg showed them the dial on the transporter and where it was set.
Remember this mark. Turn the arrow until it points here exactly. This is where you will need to set the control in order to return. Remember this, all of you.
I don't think I could possibly forget.
Now you wish to return home. Here is your home marking. Place the dial exactly, or you may go to a world that is not the one you left, such as the Serpent World, here.
Kelvin reached out and twisted the dial until it clicked at the ampersand, a symbol that reminded him of a coiling dragon, but might stand for something else. He had seen his father make a symbol like that while writing. The other setting Blurg had indicated had a squiggly line symbol, was obviously a serpent.
You will return now.
Blurg disappeared with a slight scent of ozone.
Well, Father, Kyan, we had been about to go to the Serpent World.
I want to see Lonnie first. Maybe we can get married right away, and then...
Blurg wants us to return to our own world now. Maybe we should go there first, and then...
Blurg doesn't know Lonnie.
Boys, can't we compromise? We brought dragonberries with us, but the jar of seeds labeled Astral Berries was left in the installation by Movar. I suspect the seeds are still there. Kelvin, you could go back and get them while Kyan and I wait here.
Kelvin frowned. Were astral berries and dragon berries really the same as his father assumed?
Well, Kelvin?
All right.
He took a firm grip on his resolve and stepped into the closet with all the clocks on the outside. He stepped out of the closet into the familiar chamber. Things looked the same. Nothing had changed a bit since he and his father and brother had left. Still, he was nervous. Any slight oversight could land him in serious trouble, as the recent adventure had shown. He checked the table. As he had feared, the jar of seeds was missing.
Time to return.
Kelvin stepped back into the closet. When he stepped out, nothing had changed in the Chimera's world except one thing. His father and brother were gone. Kyan had no difficulty in persuading his father.
We'll just hop over and make certain we remember this setting. If we're wrong, we'll hop right back. Blurg can almost certainly set the control right if I misremember.
I think it was just before this mark.
His father pointed at the ampersand mark.
I think, father, that it was just one of the five intervening clicks short.
Kyan set it on the percentage symbol mark.
You want to try it that way?
Yes.
Kyan was so eager to reach Lani that he was sure it was right.
All right. Just be prepared to step out and then back if it's not the right world. That's what we should have done last time.
Yes, father.
Together, they stepped into the closet. They did not see the same display they had a moment ago when Kelvin exited, but then they were in a slightly more familiar chamber with a soft bluish curtain of light at its far end and a large glowing exit sign.
Come on, father!
Wait, Kyan, you agreed we'd go right back.
We will. I just want to step outside and make certain.
John started after him and noticed something.
There was dust on the floor before. We left our footprints in it. This chamber is clean. Either this is a different chamber or someone's been here.
But Kyan was already ducking through the shimmering curtain. He was as unconcerned as though it were sunshine.
It's here, father! The ledge, the ladder, and the tree. This has to be right.
Come back inside.
All right, just let me get a breath of...
John waited for him to finish. When he did not, he grew alarmed. Fearful now, yet determined, he crossed to the glowing curtain and stepped through. Outside, fresh air. Beautiful day, high on a cliffside. He looked back. The illusion of a solid rock wall just behind was perfect. If this was technology, and he felt it was, the scientist responsible deserved congratulations. But where was Kyan? He advanced to the edge of the cliff. The ladder was there, made of something unfamiliar on Earth, a woven metallic substance he suspected would never age.
Kyan? Kyan!
There was no answer. Had the lad climbed down into the tree below? Then why wasn't the ladder over the edge of the cliff and dangling down into the branches? Fear prickled at him, raising the hairs on the back of his neck. He didn't want to leave Kyan, but his every instinct told him to return. Better to fetch Kelvin and come back for an organized search than to risk getting caught by whatever had happened to Kyan. He started around, ready to duck through the curtain. At that moment, human hands reached from apparently solid rock and laid hold of his arms. For an instant, he thought the hands were Kyan's. Then he saw that they were larger and had dark hairs on their backs. This was someone else. He had only time to grasp this before he was pulled forward against a rock face that vanished to become a blue curtain of shimmering light at a spot he knew he had not left. Charlaine arrived at the palace at noon. Using her powers of foresight, she had sensed that something was terribly wrong with Helm.
Mama! Mama, I'm so glad to see you!
A slim, boyish figure was suddenly in her arms, hugging her as though life had trickled to its inevitable end.
Oh, not so hard, John, not so hard. Goodness, I can hardly breathe. Only boys are supposed to hug this hard, you roughneck. How's Helm?
She's doing well.
You're hiding something.
Mother, why would I do that? You're the one who reads cards. You know everything.
Into the guest wing and down the hall, through a door, and they were there. Helen was sitting up in bed, brown eyes gleaming, black hair shining as she brushed. She appeared well, considering what the cards had shown. Charlene wondered.
Helen.
Mother-in-law.
They embraced. Helen seemed rigid, not at all the warm girl Charlaine had met when she and Kelvin and his bride visited.
You are feeling well, Helen?
Yes.
She had sickness in the mornings. Dr. Sturt gave me something for her. I put it in her teefy.
It helped.
Cleared it right up. She hasn't heaved since.
We've got a lot of catching up to do.
all the news, family and general.
But Mother, you know everything.
I'm really not too clear on this war situation. How'd we get into it? My cards won't tell.
Well, Mother, the situation is complicated.
Many situations are. Are you implying, daughter, that your mother can't understand?
Well, I can't understand it myself, Mother. Why Kelvin's away, or why Lester's fighting? In many ways, it doesn't make sense.
Start from the beginning.
All right, Mother. We were all of us summoned to the palace and briefed by... By the king.
King Rufford?
Yes.
A lie. The tremble in John's hand said it clearly. John was not a trembler by nature, except when she lied. For some reason, John wished to conceal something about their king. Could it be that their king was not who he seemed? If this was true, it explained the uncertainty card Charlaine had drawn. Later, when she was alone, Charlaine laid out the cards again, checking on the things that had disturbed her most about her daughter's narration. Rather than ease her concern, this made the prickling much worse. Helm was in terrible trouble, about which Charlaine could do nothing. But Lester, John's husband, was also in dire straits, and about this, she could do something. In the morning, Charlaine surprised John, if not Helm, by saying goodbye.
I have to get back to the farm. Hal's a dear, taking care of the livestock, and I know Easter will keep the garden weeded, but I don't want to impose on them.
Easter was a woman from the farm next door. Hal had rather inexplicably fallen in love with her. They had been carrying on a relationship for some time now.
Mother, how can you...
Because I'm not angry with them. Either of them.
But...
I always knew I'd lose Hal, but the cards didn't explain. When the romance card came up, I knew it was a relief. Better that he live a happy life than that he die. He was a good father to you and Kelvin, and he worked hard. He never intended to do what he did. It was fated.
But Mother, if Lester ever did such a thing, I'd...
Yes, of course you would, dear. But your foster father isn't Lester. It was in the cards. He really couldn't help it.
But to start a child with that woman, well, that wasn't right.
No, of course it wasn't. But then your natural father succumbed to the Queen of Rudd and had a son named Cain. My first marriage wasn't dissolved when Hal met me.
But Mother, Zoanna betrayed her vows. You...
It's not the same, John. Easter is a good woman. Simple, but good. Hal loves her and she him. I declared us divorced for their sakes. My marriage to Hal is now over. His marriage to her is valid. They have a difficult enough course setting up a homestead without my making it worse.
So you let them use your homestead? Oh, how nice for them! You're helping them get set up by giving them free board and even paying them for taking care of your farm?
Hush, hush. You mustn't sound that way. He was a good husband to me and a good father to you when we thought your real father dead.
So you think you and my real father might...
I don't know, dear. We'll see. The cards don't show me quite enough.
It seems to me they never did. Until afterward.
Your father would say that. Well, take good care of Helen and the babe. We'll have a much longer visit another time.
I'll take care of her. But I'm scared for her. Mother, can't you stay?
No. I told you why. Now don't pester.
St. Helens rolled over onto the prickly straw and looked up through the bars of his dungeon cell. He rubbed dust from his eyes. The two boyish faces were still there, two child heads, each wearing a crown of gold.
Stupid-looking, ain't he, Kildy?
Yeah, what do you think we should do with him, Kildum?
Torture.
Bend back his thumbs, tweak his big nose, put cream on his feet and get Cutbar to lick it off, shove a washcloth in his ears the way Helbert does to us. That's good. That's very good. Let's...
Boys, the witch. Is she...
Wouldn't you like to know, Blowtop?
The boys rushed away. St. Helens lay on the dank straw, anticipating more mischief. Then there was a dark, furry face where the boys' faces had been. Dark yellow eyes and a tail forming a question mark. The witch is familiar. He had thought it dead. According to lore, a witch's familiar was a part of her in a real sense, so that when one died, the other died soon after. This probably meant that Helbo was alive. But why was the Hellcat here? It did not look healthy. Why should it waste its energy spying on him? The day wore on. The boys did not return. St. Helens, turning the matter over and over in his mind, saw no reason to regret their absence.